for your prayers and your smiles as Adam rises to serve God and bring us his word. With that, I'll turn it over to you, Adam.
All right. Good evening, everyone. Oh, that was bad. We're like small anyway. We'll try it again here. We'll pretend we started again. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Oh, look at that. Even with half of our audience gone, we can still say it. Thank you for your time tonight. I was looking and saw that I haven't preached here since March. Kind of felt that way. Not that I haven't preached recently. I had a very good trip to Honduras. A lot of good meetings that we had there and good discussions. I've thoroughly enjoyed my time. It's nice to go and visit people in other countries. It's always nice to come home. I felt very blessed. I did get sick one day. It was not bad. And I know that was a true blessing. I have a title up here. It's "What is Your Why?" And that's kind of a strange sentence and a strange question. By the end of this, I'm hoping that you're going to find yourself truly considering this particular thing. I've been contemplating parts of this message, not specifically for this sermon, because I didn't know about it until last Sunday when Gary texted me as I was in Honduras. But I've been contemplating some of these things. So we have a small crowd. I don't know that I'm going to take very long. I do have the first three quarters of my presentation. We're going to have a lot of pictures. So, and I'm going to teach you guys something today that probably only Andy knows. And maybe some things he doesn't know. There might be some stuff some other people know. So, let's go ahead and begin. We have here the majestic Apis mellifera, also known as the honeybee. This is the European honeybee. There are numerous different kinds of honeybees. There are many different kinds of honeybees that have stingers. There are many, like down in Honduras, they have many that are stingless. They look like little mosquitoes, all the way up to some that are almost the size of your kind of average honeybee. This is the kind of full species name. And if you did not know, I have a lifelong affection for bees. When I was a kid, we used to have a couple beehives at my mom's house, and I used to sit out there for hours and just watch them. Fascinating creatures. Yep, my mom's pointing at her ear. Got one, dug itself into my ear once. It didn't really bother me. I enjoy bees. Bees are fascinating creatures. There are some fascinating things here. All those bees that you see buzzing around, flowers and the water, your soda and all that, they're all females. The females are the only ones who work. The males or the drones don't look anything like this. They are dumber looking. They sound like you can hear them flying around. They're very loud. They got big giant eyes, a rounded rear end. They don't sting. They do nothing other than they help to maintain the heat and the temperature in the hive. They beg food. They can't feed themselves. They beg the worker bees to feed them. The worker bees will give them some food every once in a while. Every day, the males will get up. They will beg some food. They will walk out to the front of their hive, and they will fly off to a drone area somewhere around where all of these drones from different hives around the area will congregate, waiting for a queen bee who has not been mated yet to come flying by. Then they will begin this contest to see who can mate with her, and then once they do, they die. And that's their life. All of the female bees can lay eggs, but only the queen is able to lay eggs that will become female. In fact, that's one way you can tell when your hive, when your queen is gone. I just had to introduce two queens into a couple of my hives the other day as I was looking through and looking in the frames. You can always tell when you have a worker who is laying eggs because they will lay, number one, multiple eggs in each little cell, which isn't right, and the worker bees can only lay drones. That's it. And the cells where the we'll see a picture of it, are very noticeable when they're drones. And so you can see that. And so an entire hive full of drones clearly can't do anything because the men don't do anything. The workers from the bee, from the beehive, they choose and they raise new queens. So the queen who's there, she'll lay eggs. And if the workers who are in there think that they're getting too crowded, or they think that their queen is getting too old, they will decide up to typically 7 of those eggs that she lays, and they will say these will be new queens, and they will create queens. Only workers can create queens. And from birth to death, your average bee lives from 125 to 155 days. Not very long. In that time, they're going to hatch. Once they hatch, if you spend any time around beehives like I do, sit and drink your coffee in the morning, you'll see that there'll be all sorts of bees that come out and they just start zipping up and down and doing all this in front of their hive. And they're memorizing what their hive looks like, how to get there. And they will always, as long as you don't move their hive, well, let me say this. They will continue to return to that particular location even if you've moved their hive. They memorize it. So how do you get away from that if you're going to move a hive? You have to move it, they say, 3 miles, because bees will go in a 3-mile area, or you have to close them up for a couple days. And once you close them up, then they decide they have to reorient themselves. So a baby bee, it's going to hatch, and then it's going to orient to its new hive location. Then it becomes a nurse bee, taking care of all the eggs and everything that are in there. Also feeding some of them will feed the queen. The queen bee, she's royalty, but her entire life, she's a slave. Her whole purpose of being is to lay eggs. And when she no longer lays eggs, as quickly as some of those bees decide she ought to, they build other queens, and then they kill her. She can't eat by herself. She's fed. They keep her cool, but that's all she does. So these worker bees, they hatch, they orient to the new location, they become nurse bees, taking care of the babies and all that. Then once a certain couple of days go by, then they become foragers. They'll go and they'll get water, or they'll be the bees you see like in here that are getting pollen, getting nectar. After that, they get a little bit older, then they're inside the hive, and their job is to drag off dead bees. For the most part, bees are very good. They know when they're going to die, and for the most part, they try to fly away and die away from the colony, because if they die inside of it, then someone's got to waste energy to drag them off. Pretty efficient. Contrary to some thought, if you hang out around Gordon, Gordon will tell you that every bee is looking to sting him. That's absolutely not true. Bees are very reluctant to sting, even the dreaded Africanized bees, right? Because they sting, they die. They're aware of this. When you see these bees who are out foraging and getting on flowers and stuff like that, their desire is to get pollen or to get nectar. They don't care about you. Anybody who's been out here with me at lunch, see bees on the flowers, they'll let you touch them sometimes. They don't come and sting you. And in a worker bee's lifetime, in 125 to 155 days, they will make 1/12 of a teaspoon of honey. And I forget, I didn't put in here how many trips to a flower that takes. But they're pretty amazing creatures. And I haven't spoken much about some of the benefits of them. You know, they make this sticky black stuff that they coat the inside and cracks and stuff like that in their hive with, called propolis. It's got antiseptic properties. Honey is a natural antiseptic. They use it for wound cleaning. Alexander the Great was mummified in honey. Honey doesn't go bad, lasts forever. It was used as currency in Egypt once upon a time. All right, more pictures. October 2017. I decided that I wanted to start the foray back into beekeeping. You see here two pictures, and I promise you that all of this is going to get to what I'm talking about tonight. Two pictures. First is this guy wearing a Dickies jumpsuit, because I didn't have a bee suit at that point. Not a very flattering jumpsuit. You see, I've got two hives. I'm digging in one. This one's a larger one, kind of your typical hive size. That's called a deep super. It holds 10 frames. You see me holding up the frame. That was the second hive that I got. This first one over here is a smaller one. It holds only 5 frames. It's called a nucleus hive, a nuke. And they'll put small, just growing hives in there. You see over here, this is a frame. And that girl right there with a red mark on her back is a queen. She's much larger, longer, fat rear end. They don't come with a red mark on them. Every year they mark them a different color. I think I have a slide on that. She is the queen, was the queen of that little nucleus colony right there, the first one I got. I'm kind of partial to her. I'll tell you my love story a little bit later. But October 2017, I decided I was going to get back into beekeeping. And so you see there that frame with her on it. You know, you see those capped pieces? Those are all babies. That's not honey. Those are babies. You can tell by the shape of it. And she's walking around looking which of these empty cells she's going to lay in. Each one of those frames on each side has 4,500 cells. So 9,000 per frame. And so if it's full on both sides, you've got 9,000 bees there, which sounds like a lot, except when you remember that every 130-ish days, you're getting a die-off. A good queen will lay anywhere from 1,000 to 3,000 eggs a day, every day, until she dies. Or until she's killed by her children, which is something to think about. During the winter of 2017-2018, this second hive, that bigger one, Andy and I discovered that it was queenless. I had noticed that there was less and less activity going on. And up to that point, because it was somewhat cold out, I didn't want to bother them too much. But we decided to look in a little bit deeper and found that there were no eggs in there. And so, at most, it was 155 days from being completely dead. All right. So I introduced this pretty little girl in like January. You see there's a queen right there. You see her big old rear end there. And she's got a yellow dot on her back. She was a brand new 2018 queen. They're marked by year. There are breeders that breed these queen bees, and they sell them, especially in places in the Southwest and in the South where Africanized bees are common. They recommend that you change your queen every year so that you kind of avoid Africanization of your beehives, which makes them somewhat more aggressive. I say somewhat. I have several hives that are Africanized. But they also say that typically don't want a queen to live more than 3 years because her productivity begins to wane. And so that first one that I had, she was marked in red. She was born in 2017. This one, 2018, yellow. And this current year, queens have a green mark on their back. So that was during the winter. And I discovered that I needed to do this, so we had to do a little bit of work to get that hive better. And I have here some pictures. The queens come oftentimes in a little package like this. And there'll be one or two, a lot of times, little workers in there because remember, she doesn't feed herself. A lot of the queens come from Hawaii because Hawaii doesn't have any Africanized bees there. So you know that the queen you're going to get is a pure European honeybee. They come like that, or they come like this, which is one of those little boxes. This was yesterday. I took this picture of a queen that I introduced. And all these bees that are around there are all simply feeding her, keeping her cool. And there's a couple ways to put them into the hive. On this one, you see he's getting ready to just stuff that in between the frames. On this side right here, there's some candy, like a hard sugar candy, in a hole. And so as the bees there begin to smell the queen, they become accustomed to her, they're going to begin eating out that candy, and then after 2 or 3 days she can get out. The bees will all be accustomed to her, even though she's not from there, they will know her and they will love her, and then she will spend the rest of her life laying eggs until she dies. The other way to introduce them is right here with a queen cage. I do this most of the time. You basically get everybody out except for her from this. You take this mesh square cage, and you shove it down onto a frame that's got babies already covered, so they'll hatch out at some point, and a little bit of honey. You get her inside of there and smush it down in there, and you leave it there for 5 or 7 days. The bees that are in there, if they don't like her, they can't kill her. The bees that are going to hatch will take care of her and feed her, and after 5 to 7 days, the whole hive will realize we have a new queen, and they'll accept her. Some of the Africanized bees are a little bit more reluctant to do that. So I had to introduce, this is one of two I had to introduce yesterday. One of those hives have been queenless for a while. They'll be more than happy to have a new queen. The other one, They're a little spicier, so we'll see what they do. During the 2017 and 18 winter, unfortunately, because I hadn't, it was some rookie mistakes. You know, you think that you want to keep your hives in the shade, which you want to shade them during the summer. But the problem is bees, they don't want to fly. They don't like to come out if it's below 55 degrees, too cold. They get cooler than that. You'll see bees sitting on the front porch of their beehive, and you can pick them up and breathe on them, and they'll come to life. But they can't fly if it's too cold. And so if you, clearly our winters aren't terribly harsh here, but if you keep them in the shade, it's going to stay below 55 for a good portion of the day. When it finally warms up, then they want to come out. But in the meantime, what do? They stay inside there. Bees keep their hive at an internal temperature of 93 degrees. No matter if it's 0 degrees outside or 120 degrees outside, the interior has to be at 93. And so while they're maintaining, during the winter, while they were maintaining that heat, they have to have resources, so they begin to eat up all of their honey. As they ate up all their honey, nobody was bringing in new honey. And so slowly but surely they began to die. I discovered this, and we moved them. But because the hive had been weakened, it allowed parasites to get in. And you see here in this picture, you see a really bad infestation of wax moths. This is a wax moth larva. They like to eat the darkened comb. That's the comb that typically the bees have been laying eggs in over and over again. And they'll destroy all that comb. They'll eat the eggs that are in it, and they will destroy a hive. And to this day, that very first hive, that small one that I showed you with that little red queen, I'm still fighting wax moths in there. And they are a very strong, very big hive. But we worked with them. We pulled them into the sun. We fed them some. I'll talk about that here in a second. And my two hives started growing really big. And they started doing really well. But then disaster struck. Disaster struck, and you see in this picture, there's a cluster of bees. And you see a smaller hive on top of that. What happened was, is a feral swarm of Africanized bees. They like to pick up and leave, and they go and find some other beehive they think they're stronger than, and they attack. And they go in, and they kill the queen, and they take it over. And that's what happened. This is the hive that had that little queen, that little yellow one that I'd worked really hard to get going. I went out there. I thought there was a swarm. As I saw it, I realized that there was a battle going on, and my bees were losing, and they ultimately lost. And so there was a picture of the aftermath of it. I found the, you know, all my good portion. They basically, they'll go in and they'll kill the queen. And then I'm assuming there's some sort of ultimatum or some sort of truce where they say, you know, it's like the Borg. You assimilate or die, right? So then all those nice domestic European honeybees become part of that Africanized thing. So I decided I was going to make lemonade out of those lemons, and I established that feral hive. I still have it. And they are my slowest hive, and I put here they're also my spiciest. They will not bother you a whole lot walking past them, but if you open up the lid, they will try to eat you. And so anyway, so that's the winter into the spring of last year. So what then? Well, I was absolutely hooked, and so I started catching swarms and attracting swarms. You see here on what would be the left side, I have this box that was up in one of my Palo Verde trees, built this small box the size of a nucleus, put some frames inside of it, and then I have a little cotton ball in there with some lemongrass oil on it, which smells like it's a swarm lure. It smells like the pheromone that bees put out when they're going to swarm. And what you'll do is you'll see that, and like it, even at your house, if you see, if you have little cracks up, if this were outside, you know, a little crack up in here or something, you might see a couple bees every once in a while zipping in and out of it and doing this, looking around it. They're looking, they're measuring, they're seeing if it's worthy of their swarm to move into. So I was sitting doing some work one day, and I heard a helicopter going over, and I stepped out, and turns out it wasn't. It was a very large swarm moving into this one. This one over here, and I had this nuke box, and you can see there's bees all over the outside. I come home from church one day, Andy says, I got a big old swarm up in my tree in the backyard. So I climbed his shaky, strange ladder and shook him into a box. And how high were we? Was I up on that ladder, Andy? 15 feet? Frightening ladder. You know, Contrary to popular belief, swarming bees, they don't really want to kill you. Before they swarm, they eat all the honey resources where they're leaving, so they don't want to sting. And they're very docile, they're very calm. Some of you in here have collected them with me. You know, you can collect them just like this. Unless you squish one, they won't sting. And typically, even if they do sting, you're not going to get a bunch of them coming to it. And so I picked up swarms wearing nothing like this. You can stick your hand all the way in them. They don't bother you. It feels really cool. So collecting swarms. Here you see I'm shuffling them from that little box into some bigger ones. How do you do it? You know, you collect a swarm, you shake them off into whatever it is, and then what you eventually do is you just pick them up by handfuls and drop them. They don't sting you. I get into one of my hives right now who's not swarming. They would sting me if I did that, but swarms don't. So here I'm just transferring them from boxes. How many swarms have I caught just in this neighborhood? Probably 7 or 8 just in this neighborhood. I've had one of them die. It died because I had it in the middle of the summer in a box that didn't have enough adequate ventilation, and they basically smothered. They suffocated in there. My fault. Felt bad about that. Over time, all of these beehives began to thrive. They began to thrive very much. So you look right here, this is a pretty good frame. What you see all in here is you see multiple colors in different parts of the nation where they have much different color flowers. You'll have blues in there and pinks. Here is mostly red and orange and yellow and some darker kind of brownish. I think it's probably a creosote pollen. So this is all pollen they're stuffing in there. Pollen is kind of like their carbohydrates. Pollen, when they start getting a lot of pollen and they begin to eat that, that tells the queen it's time to really start laying eggs because it's starting to get spring and all that. Pollen's really important. Right here, you see some capped honey. See a little bit of it. They're putting some caps on it over here. You see some liquid in there. That's some uncapped honey. They're going to reduce the water content in that honey. I forget what the percentage is they wanted at before they cap it. So before that, when it's just a nectar, before they reduce the moisture content, if you turn the frame over on its side, the nectar will drip out. But once it gets to be where they're preparing to cap it, you can turn it over. And unless it's really hot, it's not going to come out. So you got those bees on there. That's a good looking frame right there. And then right over here, you got another frame. And all of these, those are all capped brood. That's all worker bees who are going to hatch. Their hatching time is, I want to say 16 days. So 16 or 21 days from egg to hatching. And so remember I said you got 4,500 cells on either side. So that's a pretty good amount of bees going to come out on that. Very healthy hive right there. My hives, they started thriving. This hive nearly sent Andy to the hospital. When we moved it to a new location, we decided it was time to shuffle some beehives. We're going to move them into my Uncle Jim's yard. And so you typically will always move them at night because for the most part they like to be inside. But if it's summertime, they get warm and so they do what's called bearding. They reduce their numbers on the inside. A hive like this, I got 1, 2, 3 supers on there. That was a strong full hive. That was probably 60,000 bees, 50 to 60,000 bees in there. And since we couldn't get them all in, we ratchet strapped it and put it in between a long 2x4 and tried to carry it, you know, like that. And at night, the bees don't like to fly. They do like to crawl. And Andy got zapped a couple times in the back of the neck and swelled up all big. We thought he was going to die. And so I moved him all the rest of the way. A hive like that will weigh somewhere in the neighborhood of 120 pounds, something like that. Very strong hive. That was that one that was up in the big, big swarm in the tree. Some of the bees decided to go back to their old home, so I took an old hive body that I had and I stuck it there with some frames and they moved in there. And they didn't have a queen, so I introduced a very, 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 very productive little pretty girl with a yellow dot on her back. And they are so productive that if I don't go and check them every week, they're going to swarm because they just make honey so quickly. But I call them my hippie hive because they are modern artists. You see, I've got a frame that's sitting here on the side that's got little pieces. That's because they decide, you know, most bees, you'd like them to build their honey and everything straight down those frames so it's nice and neat and everything. And some of them don't want to do that, and they build their comb all over the place and crossing between frames and all that. So when you go to pull them out, it rips open and honey drips everywhere, and that's what this hive does. But these, this is a very productive hive, and they went from just a handful, maybe the size of a football, of stragglers from the Andy Killer hive, to now they're probably 50,000 bees strong. My gentlest hive, I literally can get into them like this. They are, and I get in there and I pull and I have to cut off comb and all that. They don't sting me. I'll usually wear a veil and gloves when I get into them, but I've gotten into them a lot of times with nothing, and a lot of that has to do with your comfort. They do know if you're afraid and things like that. You put off a smell when you're afraid, something they can pick up on, and it excites them. So not everybody can do that. I don't have an Africanized hive that will let me work them like that, though. Everybody's still interested. You're like, what does this have to do with God? This guy's really obsessed. This is the only original hive that I had. I bought those two. This is the only hive that's still original. And clearly the only one that's been there since the beginning is that queen. She's now over 3 years old. She seems to be kind of hitting her stride now that we've gone through starvation, wax moths, another feral hive coming to fight them off and killing out a good portion of them and all that. She's now hitting her stride. She is, when I have to introduce a new queen into another hive, I always get a frame of brood from her because I know that her babies are always very calm and very productive. She is friendly to me. Queen bees can sting. They won't sting you, though. They're not interested in that. The only thing they'll sting is other queen bees when they're fighting. But she'll walk up on my finger. She's not concerned about being looked over. She poses really well for pictures. Beautiful little bee. 3 years, her nurses have rubbed off almost all of the red marking from her. She works so good. And this hive, you know, it's stupid. I realize how dumb it is because in the end, these are bugs. But I'm really proud of this hive because I fought hard to get them to this point. It took a lot of work. This hive has only stung me a couple of times. One time was when I was showing Zach Yates how calm of a hive they were, and I opened it up and I upset one of them right off the bat. I flicked her or something and wham, she got me right under the eye. But I even think they felt bad about it. But we fought back from them being so decimated, they almost starved to death and all that, to where I had moved them all the way up to where they were in two boxes. They hit a starving time and all that and moved them back down into a little five-frame box, and I thought they'll never make it. But I babied them through and I worked with them and I helped them through and we fought off wax moths and all that stuff. And now they're a phenomenal hive. I was in there yesterday. They were happy to see me. They got honey for me. They're awesome. When this queen dies, I'm going to be very sad. Stupid bug. I realize it's a dumb bug. But, you know, a queen will set the tone for the entire hive, and Andy knows that. And even some of my Africanized hives, there'll be a calm queen, and the whole hive is calmer. And there's some of them who, when you open up, that Africanized queen is running all over the place. She's frantic, and those bees will eat you alive. Yep, I call those ones on the left side. Those are my Spice Girls. They're the ones who killed my yellow queen. They tolerate me, but they get very angry. And when you open up their hive and they get angry and they want to sting you, they start hitting. They go for your mouth and your face because they clue in on CO2. That's why people get stung in the face, right? They clue in on CO2. So if you're working bees and you're a mouth breather, like I am, because my nose has been broken too many times, they're constantly coming at it. And as these bees will come and they'll hit your veil, you'll smell something. It smells a little bit like fruit, like bananas. That's the pheromone that says, kill this person, right? So you take some smoke and you whiff it in front of you and it kind of does that, but these Spice Girls, they'll keep going after you. And then I have a tree that I got a hammock underneath, and you see there, I've got that little hive body up there in that tree, and it consistently brings in that particular tree swarms. And this one arrived about a month ago. I've got to pull them down in the night, one of these nights, from there and move them to a different location and see what they're looking like. So we've now gone through about 2 years. 2 years of me working bees. And finally, after 2 years, and we're going to go into it a little bit more here. After 2 years, we finally get that. 2 years for me to get this. I think this is kind of cool. You see in the middle, I've got all these pint jars. This is the one I have right up here on the counter. I bottled this last night. This is from two of my Africanized hives that are in Jim's backyard that I haven't put new queens in yet. Very productive bees. One of them actually, I'm sorry, I lied. One of them got a new queen yesterday, and I needed to reduce the amount of frames they had in there so they could focus on her. So I pulled some honey there, but you see how light that honey is. This one is from my hippies. This one's from my hippies, my hippie hive. Very light citrus honey. This one is from, this is from my red queen hive, my pretty little girl hive. That's from there. All those honeys taste a little bit different. Some taste a little bit more citrus, some a little bit better. It's all really good. So you guys are losing your love for bees here. You're like, all right, where are we going? Let's keep drawing. So to date, I have 9 hives. 2 years ago, I started with 2. Caught a couple of swarms. Some of them kind of fell into my hands. A couple of swarms just showed up. Some people called me. My 9th hive, I need to go pick up tonight because Jodine has a neighbor, an old couple, and they had a hive, some bees that had established themselves in a water box in their yard. And so I went and I cut them out and put them in a hive there and went to Honduras. I need to go pick them up tonight. So I've got 9 hives of bees. What did it take to get me here? To get me where I finally, 2 years later, have something to show for it. In terms of money, I bought 2 hives to start with. One was immediately queenless, so I had to buy another queen. Queens go from anywhere from $30 to $40, depending on where she's from. If they're from Hawaii, it takes a little bit more to get her out here. Had to replace that one that was killed by a feral swarm. I've either borrowed from Andy or built my own hives from scrap wood. I borrowed, bought, and built frames. You have to buy foundation for some of them you don't. I have one hive that I just put strips of wood in there, and they build their own comb off of it, and they'll build a comb kind of upside down rainbow shape, kind of cool. Problem with that is when it gets hot out, wax will melt, and so sometimes it'll fall. So I'm kind of, I have to be real diligent about that. Small hives or swarms, they need additional help bringing resources so they can begin to build comb, so they can lay eggs on, so they don't die out, and so they can begin to store stuff. And so the way that you do that is you take a mason jar like this, and you basically go one-to-one mix of honey to water, or I'm sorry, of sugar to water, shake it up, pop a couple holes in the top of the mason jar, put a hole on top of this size on top in the top cover of your hive, flip that upside down. And then what they'll do is they'll eat that sugar water, that syrup, and it will give them additional energy and resources for them to start making wax so they can do all that. And you can get them there faster. And if you don't do that, sometimes they'll just die out. They've been looking for a home too long. They've eaten all their reserves, and they'll just sit in there and starve to death. So that's one way to do it. So there's a little bit of resources there. A full super, that's one of those house sections of bees in the afternoon that's full of honey, will weigh something around 50 pounds. I say in the afternoon because in the afternoon, all of the foragers will be going out, and so they won't be in there. You only have the nurse bees and some of the drones who are too lazy to go out to the drone area. So every time you lift up one of those and you move it, it's 50 pounds. It can hurt your back. You see my iPhone there. This was a picture I put on Instagram. Why are the bees attacking my iPhone? Because residual CO2 from when I'm talking on it, right? And they smell me on it. You can see there's stingers all over my phone. Did you know that bees sting? I have a few hives that have never stung me, but I do have one particular hive, the one that tried to kill Andy, that also tried to kill me. I was trying to pull out a frame deep in the hive. to do something with, and they found their way inside of my veil. And as Jim Sr. and Cindy watched from the porch, I got stung 16 times in my face and neck. And got home, took my stuff off, and found a couple bees that were still trying to get through my beard to get in there. I would bet in the time I've been keeping bees, I mean, I've probably been stung 100 times, which some of those are because I'm just being stupid and fiddling around with them. But so now I've gone 40 minutes talking about my bees. And now you're saying, what does this have to do with what you want to talk about tonight? We realize that you like bees. All right. This will be the first and last sermon I preach about it, maybe. Why do I keep bees? Why do I endure the stings, the frustration? My wife will tell you it makes no sense whatsoever. I worry about my bees. I worry about if they're too hot or too cold, or if there's ants that are going in there, because you're always fighting ants. Ants like the sugar in the honey, right? Wax moths, varroa mites, all these things that will kill them. Why do I endure smoke? I come back from working my bees. I smell like smoke. It's hot, sweaty. Have to work them still in the summer. I wear those really, really cool coveralls. And then I have a bee jacket that goes over it that's got a hood that zips up, because I learned after getting stung 16 times in the face that I wanted something that was a little bit more secure. And it's hot. I was in it yesterday. You know, I got done and I'm just drenched with sweat. There is some cost to it. I've done a pretty good job, I think, of keeping the cost incredibly down because of making some deals with friends and things like that. Climb trees to collect swarms. Being labeled a bee nut, right? Why would I endure all these things? Beyond the fact that they fascinate me and I enjoy them, it's enjoyable. It's the expectation of something that makes it worth it. 2 years to get this, and there's something to show for everything that I've gone through. Something that is good, that's desirable, that a lot of people desire. You know, this particular thing of raw honey, there is a market in farmers markets and stuff like that. People want raw honey. This is not what you buy in the store. What you buy in the store, they're going to heat it up multiple times and they're going to get everything out of it. This has still got some little bit of pollen and stuff in it. It's good for allergies, all that sort of stuff. You know, this isn't what you buy in the store. And this little thing at farmers markets will go for $20. A quart will go for 50 sometimes, and people don't blink at it. I mean, there can be a little bit of money to be made, but realistically, it's more of a labor of love, just something you enjoy doing, and because you want to have something to show for it. So that brings me done talking about bees. And now I want to talk about your walk as a Christian. Why do we bother with religion? Shameless plug, anybody who's listened to my podcast, well, know this right here. A Christian must have an expectation of something greater from God. My last one, I said it's a man. It's one of the four primary principles, I think, of manhood, that a Christian man must have an expectation of something greater from God. And I think each one of us, this has to be why we even bother with this, that we have an expectation of something better. And Christ tells his people, he says, "Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. And if it were not so, I would have told you, I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I'll come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there ye may be also. And whither I go, you know, and the way you know." And that's John 14, 1 through 4. You know, Christ says is that, he says, there is something that you can expect, something that is good, something that you can hold to that will someday be there if you are willing to bother with this thing called walking as a Christian. Life is hard. Just like, oh, I lied to you guys, I'm sorry. Just like keeping bees is hard. It is work. It's hot and it's effort and to try to take care of these dumb things. They sting you and they get mad, and you open your doors at night because it's nice out, because you want to cool off your house, and bees will come into your lights. And, you know, I'll work in my shop and I'll have my fan on, and there's something about my fan that attracts them, and they'll come flying in, and the wind will blow them off onto Zane's shoulder, and it'll sting him in the shoulder because, right, Zane boy? Right? But life is hard. You know, Paul says this in Romans 18 and 8. He says, I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that shall be revealed in us. A Christian must have an expectation of something greater from God. Because if we don't have an expectation, or we don't have a hope for something better, for something beyond this, then there's no reason not to simply live for today. It's part of the reason, I think, why we see people living the way they do today, because they don't have a hope of anything better, and they say, I better live this life and enjoy this life regardless of who I step on or who I hurt or what I do or where I go. I better live it for the enjoyment of today, because when I die, there is nothing else. And so why not follow our own desires? And why not live our life for ourselves? If we don't have a hope of something better, then why even bother? I wouldn't mess with bees if I didn't think that there was a chance of me getting something good from them in return. I don't take everything from them. We go into the winter time. I'm not going to take much of their honey because they need it. But I am going to get something from them. There has to be a reason why it's worth it for me. Paul says, he tells the Corinthians, if in this life only we have hope in Christ, we're of all men most miserable. If the only thing that matters, if we as Christians aren't looking and convicted of something beyond, then, you know, being my grandfather, where one leg isn't working right and now his heart's not working right and all, then you're hopeless. Then why not be in despair? Because if we only have hope for this life alone, then you know, there's nothing for us. You know, when I talk about this aspect, though, of having an expectation of something greater from God, I'm not just talking about a reward in the future. You know, there's this place in Mosiah, and I've quoted it so many times, where he says, you know, that when you obey the Lord's commandments, he immediately blesses you. You know, I don't serve God because he blesses me, but he blesses me because I serve him. My expectation is that if I'm willing to discipline myself in this life, if I'm willing to forego, if I'm willing to consider something else beside my needs, if I'm willing to look at and adhere myself to the writings of these ancient writings and of this being that I've never seen, you know, if I'm willing to do all these things, that there is a blessing. I can have this expectation of it. And so it's worth it for me to be tired and for me to have to stand up to people, you know, that I've worked with, or to have to forego something that everybody else is doing, not watch something, close my eyes, look away, stand up for truth, all these uncomfortable things that we should be doing as Christians, because I have an expectation of something, it's worth it. There's honey in the end. And I say this to a group of people who already knows this, but we need to be examining this every moment of our life. So I'm not just looking at an expectation for when I die someday. I'm looking at an expectation of what God will do for my children. I'm looking at an expectation for what God will do for the business I just started. An expectation of what God will do when I offer up a prayer on behalf of my brothers and sisters. Take the effort to fast and to pray. A Christian has an expectation of something greater from God. Jerry read this morning. 2 Nephi 13, 29 and 30. Wherefore you must press forward and have a steadfastness in Christ, having a perfect brightness of hope and a love of God and of all men. Wherefore, if you shall press forward, feasting upon the words of Christ, and endure to the end, behold, thus saith the Father, you shall have eternal life. You know, the expectation of something that we have to have. If you don't have this expectation, if you can't look and honestly say, I believe there is something that I'm working for, then you ought to just get up and walk out, because this is wasted time that you could be enjoying an empty life. As Christians, we have to look this way. We have to have an expectation. You know, the Lord knows that it's difficult and it's tiring and you get sweaty and you get stung and it's heavy to lift. And there's all of these things, but He offers these promises. And are you convinced and convicted of it? Do you have an expectation of something greater from God? The Lord says in 2 Nephi 11:99, He says, "Come, all ye ends of the earth, and buy milk and honey, without money and without price." He says, "I got something that's good for you." You know, you look at the Scriptures, it said that Christ was going to eat butter and honey. Something desirable. Something good. Something sweet. You know, the Lord offers it. This should be our mindset. What is our why? Why do you even labor? You know, I asked this in the manhood podcast that I'm doing. Because it's hard to be a man. Just like it's hard to be a Christian. It's hard to stand up for the things that are right. It's hard to have expectations on you. It's hard to do those things. And so why is it even worth it? But here's a guy who had it figured out. Well, Job. Job 1 and 20. Job arose and rent his mantle, shaved his head, fell down upon the ground and worshipped. After his sons and his daughters were killed and all of his sheep, he was a wealthy, super wealthy rancher, had more of everything than everybody else, was a good man, a revered man, and he lost everything. And what was his response? He rent his mantle, he shaved his head, he fell down on the ground and he worshipped and said, "Naked I came out of my mother's womb and naked I shall return thither. The Lord gave and the Lord taketh away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." Our promotions, our overtime, the adoration of the world, the vehicle we drive, all of these things. You know, Job was the first one who said it. "You can't take it with you. But I have an expectation of something greater." He says in 13:15, Job, he says, "Though he slay me, I'll trust him. I will maintain my own ways before him. He shall also be my salvation. For a hypocrite shall not come before him." All right, rule break again. In the beekeeping world, there is a beekeeper or a bee owner that is despised. You go to these festivals or things like that, which are entertaining to say the least, because most people who are beekeepers are strange folks. There's always people there who they want to get the most out of doing the least. And there's these new hives. Jesse, kid, is enamored by them. They're called a flow hive. There's this hive where basically there's these frames that are in there. You got a bunch of bees that are in there, and you don't ever have to even take it out. You just look at it. There's little windows you can open up and see, oh, that's full of honey. You flip a switch. It moves the frame like this, and it lets the honey just drain out. They're detested by beekeepers. This guy who's kind of like this beekeeping mentor that I get, that it helps me out and stuff like that, oh, he hates the people who do that. He says, "I want beekeepers, not bee owners." Because the bee owners don't actually care about the bees. They don't name their hives. Or the pretty little red queens that they're afraid of when they're going to die. All they want is something for the moment. You know, Job says that a hypocrite's not going to come before God. Someone who doesn't truly have an expectation doesn't get to stand. And Job says, it doesn't matter what happens, I have an expectation of something greater. That is what I'm working towards, and I'm going to maintain my ways before him, no matter what else happens to me. And remember, at this point, Job was sitting there just about naked, scraping the boils that were on him, on his bald head and his bald arms, while his four friends sat there, and three out of the four told him how dumb he was. After his wife had told him he was an idiot and he needed to just curse God and die, and Job says, doesn't matter what else happens, I have an expectation of something else. This is worth it to me. We have to have that in our mind. You know, when I think about that, because, you know, we have quite a few within our local, within our church, who are growing older. Can't be easy. Can't be easy to endure in this walk of a Christian. And yet I believe it's easy when we have an expectation of something that is greater, and we're convicted and we're convinced of why it's even worth our effort. Coming very close to a close here. Moroni chapter 9, and I'm going to read 1 through 6. You see 1 through 5 here. And if we remember what's going on at this point, this is coming near the end. Mormon is the leader of the armies. He's gone back and forth of whether or not he was going to lead them or not. And the Lamanites have just been annihilating the Nephites. And he's writing this last letter to his son. He says, "Behold," and he says, "My beloved son, I write unto you again, that you might know that I'm yet alive, but I write somewhat that which is grievous. For behold, I've had a sore battle with the Lamanites, in which we did not conquer. And Archeantus has fallen by the sword, and also Lurum and Emron. Yea, and we have lost a great number of our choice men. And now behold, my son, I fear lest the Lamanites shall destroy this people, for they do not repent. And Satan stirreth them up continually to anger, one with another. Behold, I'm laboring with them continually, and I speak the word of God with sharpness, and they tremble in anger against me. And when I use no sharpness, they harden their hearts against it. Wherefore I fear lest the Spirit of the Lord have ceased striving with them. For so exceedingly do they anger that it seemeth to me that they have no fear of death. For they've lost their love one towards another, and they thirst after blood and revenge continually." This is a description of a people that they have no expectation of anything else. My anger, my need for revenge is worth everything, because as soon as someone else shoves a sword through my chest, there's nothing that's left of me. There's a people who they've lost their faith, they've lost their relationship with the Lord. They were simply living for today, and the cause of that day was to fight until there was no more fighting to happen. And here Mormon is observing these things, and it's a hopeless case, but he makes this statement. "My beloved son, notwithstanding their hardness, let us labor diligently. For if we should cease to labor, we should be brought under condemnation. For we have a labor to perform whilst in this tabernacle of clay, that we might conquer the enemy of all righteousness and rest our souls in the kingdom of God." You know, Mormon says, it doesn't matter what else is going on out there. The people who are listening or who aren't, you know, it doesn't matter. And I know what it feels like sometimes, you know, that you're trying hard to be a good example, trying hard at work, trying to work on your marriage maybe. Your kids are struggling. You're trying to do the right things. You're making changes in your life and nobody seems to accept it. All these things that make us want to give up sometimes. You know, it's not worth it. I got stung 16 times in the face. I'm just going to throw it out and be done. And we get like this sometimes, and I understand it. But there's this awesome encouragement that Mormon tells his son. He says, even though all these things happen, we still have something that we have to do. And we do it so that we don't be condemned by it. We have a responsibility. And, you know, he's talking to his son, a minister, but I don't gather that Moroni was ministering a whole lot at that point. You know, he was saying this for us, that despite all of the things that are going on around us, we have a labor to perform while in this body, and it is to conquer unrighteousness, to overcome, even though it's hard and it's difficult and it's painful. It means you lack sleep, and it means sometimes you lack wisdom, and sometimes you make mistakes. You have to go and ask for forgiveness from God and from your spouse, from your children, from your friends, from your boss, whatever it is. It's worth it. Because we have an expectation of resting our souls in the kingdom of God. And so what is our why? A Christian must have an expectation of something greater from God, or else all of this is for naught. So I hope that you've taken something. Maybe you've learned a little bit about how I feel about the majestic bee. Hopefully it was a lengthy explanation for why I feel like that's worth it, but hopefully it helped to show you that, you know, it's really not a lot different. This life is difficult. The walk as a Christian is difficult. I don't believe it will ever get any easier for us. I believe in your life, as you grow spiritually, there becomes more difficulty sometimes in walking the way the Lord wants. We have to have an expectation of something greater than God, greater from God, for our future, for our eternal life, for our prayer life, for our marriage, for our children, that there is something sweet that only God can bring. You know, this is the only insect that we eat something from. Well, I'd say that. You go to some places, you can eat crickets and stuff like that. But no other insect puts off something like this that we eat from. Bee vomit. But it's really good, right? It's great, right? The only place we can get it from. And just like the happiness